This week on Hyperspace Broadcasts, we go from zero to hero. Or rather, zero drives hero insane. View. Welcome to Hyperspace Broadcasts, a podcast where we discuss our memories of a specific Toonami program for watching it and trying to decide if it's worth revisiting or if the rose-colored glasses are best left on. I'm Michael Doak.
And I'm Pete Reby.
Or your actual name.
Peter Reby.
And
this is the one podcast where you can revisit the legendary action cartoon block that defined a generation. There might be other podcasts, but they probably suck. I don't know.
Yeah, we're not going to acknowledge that other podcasts about this exist. Because if they did, why would you listen to us? Except for all the funny stuff we say to each other on occasion.
The wacky hijinks we've yet to come up with.
We came up with some last episode.
We did a little bit. All right, and so now anyway, we're on, the block three of Gundam Wing that's introducing the episodes 21 through 30.
Mm-hmm. And since we're kind of low on memories about this property, which is ostensibly the point of this first part of the podcast, I wanted to talk about just some of the female characters in the series because I think there's some interesting things going on there. I think that one of the more controversial aspects of the series is Relina, kind of. And I don't know. I want to get your impressions. I want to
like
talk
Relina.
A bit about my impressions.
Yeah. Yeah, like because the female characters are interesting, and you don't really get them very often in a Gundam series. Like, I mean, you get female characters, but you don't really get them being particularly active. They almost never pilot mobile suits, like mainline storyline mobile suits. I guess they do.
I wouldn't say that at all.
Fine.
That is not true.
Okay, but they're never the main character. We can say that.
Okay, that's fair.
0080 is
not
Alex
that they're
aside.
Here necessarily either. But
no, but
that's beside the point.
Well, and here they, yeah, that's true. And so you've got, you know, you've got the main three we identified, you know, Relina, Noin, and Lady Un. Both, you know, some of them have a little strange relationships. Their relationships with men are a little odd. You've got,
I guess let's start at the back of that particular trio with Lady Un, because she's been pretty prominent, especially in their last segment. She's going to continue to be prominent in this segment, if I remember correctly.
And she's only getting crazier.
Yeah. I think Lady Un's interesting because, A, her first name is Lady, which is great, and I'm just restating myself at this point, but
not a title.
Didn't realize that until like literally when we were discussing this podcast. And she's got kind of a split personality thing going on right now, which is interesting.
On top of like the like hyper militant, kind of like crazy devoted soldier who's just like willing to kill tons of innocent people. Now you've got a split personality and she's like a happy pacifist who doesn't get it. It doesn't get, you know, what's wrong? There's nothing wrong here. This is great. Like, we're going to make peace.
Well, I think
envoy of peace. And
I think it's interesting because really she stands to me as the series' first major villain.
Mm-hmm.
She's the first character that really does anything that villainous.
Yeah.
By threatening to, you know, blow up the colonies. And
She really just lets nothing stand in her way, which is kind of cool. Yeah. It's not something you see very often in female characters in a lot of stuff like this, and in Gundam in general. I don't think I've ever seen like a female character be so like just ruthless and brutal, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, she's very no nonsense, and also like on top of that, there's the fact that for the most part, with some strangeness aside, no one else in this series is that no nonsense.
Yeah,
about really. What they're doing, at least not at this point.
Yeah. Like Trey's is way too philosophical to just like
exactly.
get down to brass tacks. Zek's the same way.
Yeah, she's really the only one who's willing to like really go the distance to do what quote unquote needs to be done.
Yeah.
And is actually successful at it too. Like that's one of the things that's also kind of interesting. Yeah, she's terrible and holds, you know, millions of, if not, I don't know how many
billions
people
of lives at hostage. Yeah.
But she holds millions of lives at hostage, and it works actually completely.
Yeah. The like, Gundams completely fail.
It doesn't backfire. Public opinion doesn't even really turn against Oz. In fact, she's pretty effective at turning public attention towards Oz as a positive force in space afterwards. It's interesting to see such a like an overtly villainous character at first not only become a much more restrained sort of like semi-pacifist person, even if it is through multiple personality stuff. But it's interesting to see them be very effective.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think she'd just be like so ruthless that she'd end up destroying everything around her. But
And she's
more
no,
like cunning.
Like, exactly. And it's interesting because this is a maybe not totally strange thing to say, but it actually makes me think of like Star Wars, because of course. But I remember Grand Moff Tarkin, there's some interaction between him and Leia aboard the Death Star in the first movie where she says something along the lines of, the tighter you grip your fist, the more sand will slip through your fingers.
Yeah.
Which is great in Star Wars. That doesn't happen in Gundam. Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool, actually. It's kind of subversive is the wrong word, but it subverts the kind of trope of military dictatorships super bad and everyone knows it, and you know they just get worse and worse and everyone sort of rebels and then they end up losing.
It at least makes it a bit more nuanced.
Yeah, of course that's speaking as of right now. And who knows what the future holds? I kind of do, but
yeah. Well, and
not specifically regarding this.
And regarding her split personalities, someone mentions like she Lady Yun's a different person out of a uniform, which leads me to believe. Do you think that uniform's magic? I'm saying like,
wouldn't that be? She is. Yeah, her uniform is like the crystal on Reishi's bracelet from Gundam Build Fighters. It's just like in an otherwise non-magical universe, there's just this like, one thing.
Right. It's
that's really weird and out of place.
Yeah.
I'd be down for that.
Enchanted uniform, or it's got even better, it's like a science explanation. It's like
or enchanted
this
glasses, because that's really what does it.
That is true. Yeah.
I want to point out that I want to point out that when we were watching this, and she's first shown with her hair down and no glasses and no uniform, you were like, wow, they just cheaped out and used the same voice actress as Lady Yun for this fucking character.
Yeah. I'm just like totally talking shit.
Yeah.
It's like, what? That's definitely
and
the same.
Just,
which they do use the same voice
smirked.
Actors for extra roles, but.
Well, of course, yeah. There's been at least one Alliance soldier that's just Duo.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious like, when you notice it.
Duo not even trying to sound different, just sounding exactly the same. It's a real Shenmue situation.
Yeah, I guess perhaps we should mention from the top that her alternate personality, it does look like completely as completely different as you can get without dyeing your hair. It's just
changing her face.
Her hair's down, her glasses are off, and she's smiling.
She probably looks more different as her like nice personality than Zex Marquise looks from Miliardo Peacecraft.
I mean, I guess, but you're just talking about like a mask versus changing your hair.
Yeah, but that's my point. Like, he's supposed to be hiding his identity. She's not even.
Yeah, right.
But her identity is more hidden from the viewer.
Yeah, than obvious metal mask.
Yeah. So that's Lady On. Let's move on. What about Noin? How are you feeling about Noin?
I like Noin a lot. When you mentioned No Nonsense, I kind of realized that I think all the female characters in the show are a lot more grounded than almost any of the male characters. Like, the male characters are always just like head in the clouds, thinking philosophically, talking melodrama bullshit, you know, like,
that's a good point, actually, for the most part. I mean, Noin definitely inherits some of Zex's soliloquy, but...
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and the female characters are more, like, prone to action and emotion, which maybe that's more of a, kind of more of a stereotype, but I think it's refreshing, because sometimes the melodrama soliloquy, fucking waxing philosophical shit, can be just kind of obnoxious and almost kind of up its own ass.
Yeah, it does get old on occasion.
And hearing characters just be like, no, fuck it, we're doing this. This is ridiculous. What are you doing? Like, taking a more logical approach is refreshing.
I think that's a fair point. It's interesting that you say that. I have to confess that I broke my own rule in that I watched a couple of these episodes from this coming block last night, actually. Yeah, I know, I'm the worst.
Not heard this yet.
Which, I'm not... Yeah. But it's stupid, and I'm never doing it again, to be honest, fine. Because...
I'm never going to do it again, I promise.
No, I'm not saying I'm never going to do it again because I'm, like, so ashamed. I'm saying I'm never going to do it again because it's annoying, because there's stuff that happens in those two episodes that I want to talk about right now, and I can't. Trying to, like, dodge around it. And it's dumb.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yes. There we go. Got to get
speaking
some
of annoying. Riff Factory. get my riff punch card in.
Yeah. Get your guitar. Do some riffs on it.
Ooh, a riff. Riff. So annoying.
Yeah. So annoying.
She's cool. She's cool.
Let's
like,
get
she's...
out of that bottomless well.
I find her to be less, whereas, like, it's a little weird that you get, like, Lady On is obsessed with Trays, and it's kind of almost unrequited and manipulative of Trays to just kind of...
Yeah, it's a little creepy.
Yeah. And you know, perhaps fitting for Trays' character, but still. Whereas Noin could be argued has a somewhat similar relationship with Zex. At least it's at least it's both a pairing. Like she cares a lot about Zex, but I find it that it's not so much like worship, or you know, it's not kind of like creepy or obsessive or worship. More so than like loyalty,
like camaraderie.
Yeah, camaraderie and loyalty as a soldier to like a commanding officer.
That's fair, and I think
find it respectful.
It
and I don't really find it.
He,
I don't find it very romantic. Which is,
understands.
I think, a good thing. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not as aloof about it, which...
Yeah, exactly.
...helps it seem less weird. I think they actually do have a... It's interesting because when I watched this a couple years ago, there was one line from her that stuck out to me, and I was like, well, that's fucked up. Which was basically... like, I think in her introductory episode, she implies that she intentionally did somewhat poorly on the final exam when they were both in whatever academy together, so that he could be top of the class. And I always found that kind of weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah, that is a little odd.
All right, that's like, ugh. But
is that like you're so obsessed with him that it's like, well, he's got to be the best. I can't be better than him. Like,
it's
weird thing to suggest.
Though, like, watching it now, I don't feel like that is the overpowering aspect of her character.
Yeah, I don't think so at all.
Like, with that viewing, I definitely did. And to be honest, I kind of threw a lot of the female characters away in that viewing because I was like, Noyne's obsessed with Zex. Dawn's obsessed with Trey's. Relina's obsessed with Hero.
Right, it's just lazy.
This is stupid. Like,
yeah.
But actually, and I mean, kind of going off of that, Relina's had some pretty interesting development even so far.
Yeah, yeah. I Relina's awesome because yeah, at first, like, her nonsensical obsession with Hero, it's just like, okay, yeah, sure. I think he's a great guy. It's like, you have no experience. You have no idea that he'd be a decent person at all. He just tries to kill you. I get maybe she's curious, but it's like, yeah, it just seems nonsensical. But it develops, and she develops into her own character who's independent and badass. Like, she just fucking goes to a party where Lady Un shows up and just pulls out a gun on her and starts firing. It's insane.
With the intention of assassinating her.
Yeah,
which,
yeah.
Again, is something
comes out of nowhere.
Just totally forgot about.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with Hero or anything like that. It's got to do with her getting vengeance for her family. Like,
yeah, which is, again, like, that's kind of great. I gotta be honest, there are times when I start to wonder what happened to her stepmother / her adoptive mother.
Well, she's acknowledged.
She didn't die.
But yeah, she's really just background, because, like, she meets up with them after her father dies, and she cries, and they, you know, whatever.
I think that's the last scene with her in it.
Yeah, I think that is.
Like, what happened there? I mean, I get that she knows now that she's not technically her daughter, but, like, what is that? Just legal guardianship revoked.
You're everything
only 16.
Revoked.
Like, just having your butler with a mustache who also is your chauffeur and also your pilot fly / drive you around following Hero.
Following
and then finding out that Zex
assassin.
Is your brother, because of course he is, because he's a mask-wearing anti-hero, and you're a female lead in this series, and that's how Gundam works.
yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's tradition. Yeah, well, with that, let's make an over-under.
Yes.
I've got one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in case you can't tell, we had some recording difficulty earlier,
we had to re-record.
This at least is repeated.
I came up with this one.
Yeah, you came up with it, so you tell it, because I actually want to take the bet.
So, yeah, we want to do, just following the theme on a little bit on gender, we're going to do...
Well, female characters.
And female characters, yeah. Let's see if this next block of episodes can pass the Bechdel test... even once. And so the Bechdel test being, to explain, it's basically kind of a popular measure of independence in female characters in a lot of media, especially from men. And so it's like, if a movie would pass the Bechdel test if it had a scene where two female characters are talking to each other and they discuss something besides men. And
men or the main character are not the topic of their conversation.
Right. And the reason we bring it up is because it's like a shocking amount of movies completely fail the Bechdel test. It's just like the female characters are always talking about the male characters and stuff.
Or
and they're
more
never talking about
a lot of movies simply don't have more than one female character. That's major.
Right. And so I suggest maybe we should try it with this. Now, it might be pretty hard because, first of all, I mean, this is a show made and aimed for young men and teenagers, but typically men in Japan. but
it did actually manage to draw a significant female fan base in the West.
Oh, cool.
Although Japanese female fans tend to hate it, from what I've read.
Interesting. And the only thing I'm a little concerned about is that it's pretty rare that you get two female characters talking to each other, which, you know, maybe that's just the kind of thing, is that they kind of fall into support roles for male characters. You get Lady Un and Relina interacting on one episode where she shoots Noin her.
And Relina interact in some too.
You know, that's true. Yeah. Actually,
I happen to know, I'm pretty sure in this block of episodes, there's also like Sally Poe and Catherine to a lesser extent. And I do know I don't know for a fact, I'm pretty sure that in this block of episodes, another fairly major female character is introduced.
Okay.
So let's say two times.
So
I'll take two or under.
Two or under?
Well, yeah, it's over under, so.
Okay, so, but does the under always take the exact number?
Well, I'm going to this time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, because if it's just under two, then you can only really have one.
Yeah, if it's one.
Or zero.
Oh, shit. All right. By the way,
one or under seems almost. Fine, okay. I'll go.
I think two
over
or under.
Two. Okay. I'll go over. I'll go over two.
Okay. By the way, this is crunch time for me because Peter totally won the last two of these. And that means if he wins this one, he gets to pick the next series that we watch, which I don't really care, to be honest, but
Hamtaro.
I do want to pick the next series.
We're not watching fucking Hamtaro. We might avoid that one outright.
Just to spite you.
I'll be so mad.
Just watch Tenshi in Tokyo. We'll like watch the mid Tenshi Muyo series.
Just start with that one.
Yeah. I don't think they're connected anyway.
No, they aren't. But yeah. All right.
At any rate, let's get onto it. Let's watch these episodes. Let's
pop that fucker in.
Hero Yui, bred for battle. He walks the path of a warrior. Will he choose love or hate?
What's wrong with me?
Gundam Wing, coming March 6th. Suit up.
Hey, listeners. If you don't recognize me by voice, this is Michael, here to extend a sincere thanks for lending us your ears for our observations and the occasional joke that actually lands. If you want to do even more for us than you already have, please subscribe on iTunes, write us a review on iTunes, or tell a friend who might enjoy this program. Our next episode will be up on January 11th, and you will hear us then. We'll return to our discussion in Gundam Wing in just a moment.
Zhang Wufei, another in a proud line of warriors. He is beholden to no man.
I'll be true to my own sense of integrity.
Gundam Wing, coming March 6th. Suit up.
All right, we are back from that series of recaps.
Yep, from all seven of those recap episodes. I exaggerate a little. Now,
only a little.
Yeah. This block had two recap episodes in a row. And what you seem to recall is one half recap episode.
Yeah. There's one that's basically, I would say more like a quarter, but yeah.
Still to an annoying amount. Well, let's dive in. This block starts with Katra's family getting killed in a really stupid way. In space. Katra, like, is rescued in space because he's drifting by this woman who just turns out magically to be his sister that he never heard of.
Well, I'm not sure I'd say that, but
never
for
met,
whatever. I don't even know if they never met. I think they met. He just didn't recognize her somehow. Oh. I don't know. The point is that it takes way too long to reveal that she's his sister.
And they go to meet their father, and they're on a space colony or something. And the Winter family is being protested because people think they control their resources or something. So Everyone's flipping out. Dad just goes crazy.
Yeah, and they're the Winter family's anti-Oz, which the colonies are now pro-Oz. So,
yeah,
that's a big part of it, too.
So the father, and I just want to kind of get a little into depth in this episode because it's kind of stupid. The father is, like, really resilient to Oz, and Oz is like, we're going to make weapons in this colony now. And he's like, nope, no way you're going to do that. And instead of, like, fleeing or attempting to sabotage, he kind of attempts to sabotage and flees in a suicidal way where he, like, takes the satellite, this giant, like, munition satellite...
He detaches the resource satellite
and flies
away. And the colony just shoots the fuck out of him and he dies.
Yeah, and he's like has a clear chance to escape, and like Katra and his sister are pleading for him, like, Dad, come on. And he's just like, nope, gotta sacrifice myself. See you later, kids. And he just fucking gets blown up.
This causes both it causes Katra to get catapulted out of his seat in the space shuttle.
Yeah.
So his sister jumps out of her seat and, like, basically acts as a cushion for him to hit instead of the wall of the, like, shuttle. So she also dies.
Yeah, she dies from, like, slight whiplash. And
I wouldn't even say it's whiplash. She dies from, like, hitting a wall.
And,
you know, I...
Very slowly in space, which, okay, like, some, you know, there's some physics shit in space. I'm sure maybe you could fly slowly into a wall in space and get hurt, I guess. I'm no physics major, but it looks real dumb, and it doesn't seem to make sense. Yeah.
Well, that's the problem, is not even so much, like, could this happen? It just, the way it's portrayed, it doesn't look like it would have killed her at all.
Yeah,
that's the problem. It's not, oh, this is impossible. It just, the way it's, you know, visualized doesn't look deadly. It looks like she kind of, like, fell into bed.
Like, yeah, it would, like...
It's extremely boring.
It would be a stretch to even say it, like, damaged her ribs, but it kills her. And...
Again, she could have easily hit her head against the, you know, the bulkhead. I would have believed that.
Could have had bought that in many a other ways to have this character die.
And I want to point out about this whole episode.
Yeah.
Also, Katra goes crazy as a result of his family dying. I want to point out that actually, like, thinking back on Gundam Wing, most of my memory of the plot comes from reading the manga adaptation. Mm-hmm. And this in the manga adaptation was handled so much better.
Yeah.
Like, I remember this because I totally, like, blanked this whole episode from memory the last time I saw it, but I remember the last time I saw it too. I was like, what the fuck is this? This is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, why does it happen? It's just done badly. In the manga, for the record, basically you have a situation where, you know, Katra meets up with his dad and his sister. There's no, like, ooh, actually I'm your sister bullshit.
Yeah, right.
meets up with him. There's protesters outside their house. A Leo comes out and it announces that it's their guard, and then it just starts firing on the protesters. Jeez. A couple of tourists come in. The pilot of the Leo hops out the back hatch, and then the tourists shoot the hell out of the Leo and also the house, which brutally kills the dad and sister.
Right, and like a deliberate act of assassination hidden under civil defense.
And also, like, not only does it just, it's faster, among other things, and it's way more graphic, which is probably, I mean, to be fair, the manga was an adaptation, so it's not like they were like, oh, we can't do that, you know, but it, would it have worked on TV? Maybe not as much. But one thing I think it really did better, aside from just everything, is that it gives Katra a convincing reason to go crazy. I mean, watching your family die is horrible, obviously, and that's going to give anyone a reason to go crazy, but this is so much more personal and brutal because he's in the room with them. Like, he sees them dead.
Yeah, it's and they don't die because of, like, being foolish like the dad or an accident like the sister. It's like, no, they're just assassinated brutally.
It's deliberate and it's brutal, and again, it's way more personal. So
and
I think
with
that's
the extra,
just handled better.
And with the extra, like, twisted nature that it's, you know, that it's made to look like they were killers, you know.
Exactly.
And it makes Oz or whatever look great and makes the Winter family look like murderers. It's like, yeah, that would drive anyone fucking nuts. Yeah. Instead, yeah, we get this bullshit.
So
before we go to the
results,
before we go to the next episode, there is a really great moment in this where this guy in, like, the Oz committee, that's talking, that argues with Katra's father. When Katra's father ends up fleeing, he flips out and he's just like in this room full of this big committee, and he's like, "I say we shoot him down. Who's with me?" And instead of everyone going, "Yeah," like you'd expect, everyone just silently presses buttons to vote yes. And
it's
a really hilarious
earlier in the episode, but it's hilarious. Yeah, it's hilarious.
It's a really
silent,
great unintentional goof. Like, it's just like, yep, cool. Okay, I guess we're gonna vote for this. All right.
Yeah, there's nothing like a bunch of, like, lights lighting up to indicate a yes vote on a bunch of desks, cutting
silently
immediately to laser cannons murdering somebody. Like,
yeah, right.
And, you know, I say that and it sounds dramatic, but it's not. It's silly. It doesn't, again, it's impersonal. It's not like they show, you know, one guy voting with, like, a heavy heart. It's just a pan of the whole room, you know, with
really
all these
fast
lights lighting up.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
There's no
it
timing.
It could be more dramatic easily, but it's not. So it's a rough start to this set of episodes, unfortunately. So following that, we get some of the Gundam pilots being captured. Hero gets captured by Oz, I think at the end of the last arc.
And that's when Troa is involved too. Like, Troa is already working with Oz. So that's when they reunite. Duo goes undercover by wearing sunglasses and nothing different. Just sunglasses.
Which is, of course, like, classic, but also hilarious because he was widely televised as being this Gundam pilot who then escaped, and somehow no one's looking for him, and he can interact directly with Oz people without them realizing, like,
he meets
oh,
a
you're
woman,
that person that we're supposed to be looking for.
He meets a woman named Hilda, and eventually just kind of ends up, like, when he's got to, like, provide credentials or something to a checkpoint guy, ends up just being like, "Well, I guess I don't have credentials. Fuck you!" And he, like, throws his helmet and runs off and gets captured.
And they have a pretty sweet space battle in Leo's. He kind of convinces her to leave Oz pretty quickly.
Yeah, pretty quickly. Pretty big change of mind based on, like, one little thing he said. Where does she go? She kind of vanishes, at least for now.
She comes back.
I'm sure she does, yeah.
Yeah. She's not a very major character from my recollection, but I do know that she returns a couple of times.
Then you get the next episode, you get, like, so, you know, you got Hero and Wufei and Duo are all in jail at this Oz base. Tro is working for Lady Un at the same base. And suddenly you get
base.
Yeah, okay. And then you get Katra shows up in the Wing Zero, which is like a suit. It's like a prototype version of the Wing Gundam that is really super strong, and it's got this insane buster cannon that literally blows up a satellite, like a gigantic resource satellite, in one shot. And later, I think a colony in one shot.
Yeah, it definitely blows up an evacuated colony in a single shot too.
Yeah,
because
which
again,
is
Katra's gone crazy.
Yeah, so, and I like crazy Katra. Like, he's really losing
it. Too.
I preferred
again,
him with
will
the
say I preferred the manga version just because, probably due to the fact that, again, you know, it's a different medium. He was a little off model for his craziness, like,
right, yeah, you get a little shakiness, a little strange look in his eyes.
Yeah, it was mostly the eyes, like, look really disturbed, and that's kind of not in the show, which, again, like, it's dumb to complain about, but
well, and
he
like
looks
at the end,
pretty normal, and you can only really tell because he's acting overtly crazy. Like, he doesn't look unhinged.
Well, and at, like, at the end of episode 21, where he first goes crazy, he does, like, this, like, crazy person voice and laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's really losing it. And actually, I really enjoyed that.
Kind of off-model, too. Like,
it makes him
look crazy. And
but he shows up here, and he's, like, not really... Yeah, he shows up here, and he's not really doing it very much. I mean, he's going crazy. He's blowing up, like, he's just going nuts. I don't know how he got the Wing Zero, where that came from exactly, but...
Yeah, it's kind of glossed over. But Troa and Hero are sent out in the Mercurius and V8, and I'm going to say at least one time, I'm not sure which is which.
And I'm pretty sure the Mercurius is red. Mercurius is red shield, and V8 Splash V8's, is the...
the gun.
Blue gun one. Blue gun, red shield.
Yeah, there we go.
They go to defend the colony. Hero gains some insane plot armor because, like, he can, like, block the Buster Blast that destroyed a colony in one hit and survive.
Yeah, well, so does Troa to an extent because he gets straight up shot with the Buster Rifle and just doesn't get killed immediately. Like, it damages his suit. And you can, I mean, personally, I mean, yeah, it's plot armor, obviously, but personally, I like to think that the Buster Rifle has, you know, a setting system.
Yeah.
Like, you're not firing at full power every single shot.
Right, probably. Yeah, you don't need colony destroying power to shoot down a Leo.
Yeah, or a V8. But, so, Troa gets hit, and Hero is like, you're gonna die, like, your suit's gonna explode, get out of here. So Troa flies away. Gives this long speech, which I expected to be cut off by him exploding, but it's not. He just delivers it in full and then explodes. Then Hero and Katra fight a bit before eventually Hero incapacitates him. Hero's pretty brutal. I distinctly remember one exchange, which is Katra like, Hero, you gotta save Troa, he's gonna die. And Hero just says, yeah, and you're the one who killed him.
Yeah, like, yeah.
He's very...
Way to go, asshole.
No nonsense about who exactly is responsible for that.
And in this episode also, Trace ends up splitting off from Romofeller, the Romofeller Foundation, over his qualms.
I don't think that's the same episode, but it is.
It's a... Well, technically this fight goes over two episodes.
Yeah.
So at the end of the fight,
this is a rat's mess right now. We're not really going episode by episode.
In any case, yeah, Trey splits off from Romofeller over his qualms with the mobile doll system.
Which leads to a splinter group known as the Trey's faction.
Don't worry, and another splinter group. Out,
yeah. Again, the enemy faction is split in two.
It's Earth Sphere and Oz split up and fight each other, and then there's Oz and Romofeller, and they split up, and so there's Romofeller Oz, and there's Trey's faction Oz, and they look pretty similar, and are hard to tell apart.
The Trey's faction guys have the old uniform, while the Romofeller guys have a new, super cool looking blue uniform.
Just kind of looks like a palette swap.
Well, it is, but, which I said super cool looking kind of sarcastically, I shouldn't have, because it is actually pretty cool looking. I prefer it to the green.
And this guy from Romofeller, who I don't remember his name, is it Duke Germain or whatever? Or
is it Tuberov?
Tuberov.
The engineer?
Yeah, Tuberov comes in and shoots Lady Un.
Yeah.
And kills her.
Just shoots her right in the stomach.
Yeah. It's pretty surprising. So she's gone. She's gone, though.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Yeah, so...
Hero and Katra get captured. Hero ends up being made to, like, test pilot the Wing Zero prototype. Or he kind of volunteers to do it when he's captured. And there's some sort of... My understanding of this is that there's some sort of system in the Wing Zero that enhances fighting ability, but it kind of makes you go crazy paranoid and violent.
Hero, that's more or less it.
Yeah, I mean, and Hiro, again, Hiro basically goes on a rampage in this base, and he's like, I'm not wrong. Everyone's trying to kill me. Anyone who could possibly kill me is my enemy. And he just starts blowing up. Don't worry, they're just like Oz people, so no one cares.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting, and again, like, this comes back to me remembering most of this stuff from the manga, is that, again, when characters used the Zero system and couldn't handle it, it was communicated visually as well as their, like, dialogue. Like, Hiro suddenly deciding to start killing everybody doesn't even really seem that out of character.
Yeah,
like,
no, it doesn't. It is. I mean, okay.
At the end of the day, why not? Like, he has the most powerful fucking mobile suit.
He threatens to kill just about everyone
existed.
He meets.
He might as well just blow everything up and leave. Like, why not? There's no, like, visual communication that he's being driven crazy. The dialogue is kind of, I mean, it's there, is what I'm saying, but again, it's not, like, super clear. There's usually a point in the manga where it's very obvious. Like, I guess maybe I just want my media to fucking
spoon feed you.
Hit me over the head with
no, it wasn't. I don't think it was clear enough.
But
they do end up describing.
So he tries to kill Troa, or Katra, rather. Troa.
Katra goes to stop him, and the Mercurius, and they end up fighting. Eventually, somehow, I think he ends up convincing Hiro. That he's under.
Basically not to self-detonate, because Hiro's going to self... Or I think actually Katra sets the planet defensors and says that he'll self-detonate and just kill them both and contain the explosion.
He's going to self-detonate with Mercurius. Somehow convinces Hiro to... Hiro ends up like popping open the suit and falling out and falling like 30 feet where he slams into the floor. Which is always an entertaining, like, weird way to survive.
Yeah, naturally, he's fine.
Yeah, right. And more or less. I mean, he's, like, knocked out, but he in real life, is like, every bone in his body would be broken.
And he has a vision of Relina, which is one of the moments of this show that come up a couple of times where it's very, like, for lack of a better word, new type-y, which, if you're not familiar with Gundam, like... It's very,
it's like psychics. Like,
yeah, it's
pilots
it's like
who are really, really good in Gundam.
Presence or psychic connection between characters, and it doesn't like it's a big part of the original Gundam series and all the stuff that takes place in that universe. But again, this is an alternate universe where that stuff doesn't exist.
Yeah,
so it's kind of weird when it happens.
Never mentioned.
It's just like I don't really. It's weird when Katra can touch Hiro's like weirdly glowing body and like dead glow in his hand and then know what Hiro was hallucinating just then.
Yeah. It's like, oh, there's a girl, you know. She's from Earth. Well, let's go back to Earth.
Better go back to Earth. So, long story short, they go back to Earth and are sheltered by a Trey's faction group. That episode, from what I recall, is kind of nothing-y except that they play with some dogs, and it's funny.
Hang on a second. I think you're skipping two really important episodes. There's a recap episode with Relina, where they just recap everything, and there's another recap episode with Trace, where they recap
those
everything.
Did happen.
Again. They recap everything again. Different
in,
things.
In all fairness
to
the recap episodes, Relina's recap only gets about halfway through what we've seen so far. And then Trace basically covers the rest of it. But it's still
annoying.
It's still egregious. And this is the thing, because I realized this while I was watching it, but basically the recap episodes, I get it. I know why they have them. Like, because this is a show that presumably is showed on a weekly basis, and it's pretty, like, plot-wise anyway. There's a lot going on. It's fairly complex.
And they want to catch any new watchers.
Yeah, but anyone who is just coming in now, or even 10 episodes previous, like isn't going to have a lot of context for the Alliance, for example. Like, what yeah. is that? So I understand why it is like this. It's interesting, though, because this is like an artifact. Like, we don't, this yeah. doesn't really happen anymore.
Yeah, nowadays we have Netflix, everything's released at once, or you're going back and you're like downloading everything or watching a DVD, and you're watching everything in like one sitting pretty much, or in a couple sittings. So these are completely useless. It's just like, oh, I just saw all of this shit happen. Like, I don't need to see it again.
Yeah. Or at the very least, like, not necessarily, you know, like Mad Men, for example, is a show that is pretty complicated, and there's a lot of stuff that will happen that doesn't have real effects until like a couple episodes down the line. But
in Game of Thrones too, they do yeah. that. They do it in and, a really nice way, where they'll do the previous episode thing, but it won't just be what happened previous episode. It usually won't be at all. It'll just be like things that it will show like plot threads from earlier episodes from anywhere yeah, that from will season be picked one, up on. Season 1 through 5 that will be picked up on. So,
but the point is that in these shows, there's not even so much like, oh, it's all released at once, you're expected to binge watch it. But the thing is, nowadays shows just have much more of an assumption that as a viewer, you have watched it all. And if you haven't, then well, too bad.
Yeah.
You can stream it somewhere or, I don't know, download it, I guess. Like, the idea of the recap episode is very dead. And
yeah.
I'm not really sad about that. Like, no. Getting through those 2 episodes was a pain in the ass. At the same time, it's kind of interesting to think, like, I don't know, that there was at one point a time where if you missed episodes of a show, you could still follow what was going on necessarily yeah. without having seen them already.
Well, I bet no one misses the recap episode, but it is kind of symptomatic of something people might actually miss, which is like the wait, you know, like the being able to watch something live, not live, but you know, watch yeah, something well, as I'm... it comes weekly.
Yeah. And it's partially the wait, but what I'm saying is, I think it's the weight and also the existence of shows which don't really exist that much anymore, where you aren't expected to have seen everything
yeah,
to be able
yeah.
to follow it. Like, that's kind of an old and kind of forgotten concept, which is to an extent kind of sad, because like, I mean, I love Game of Thrones. But I remember the lead up to, I don't know, last season or whatever. And I was like, crap, now I have to watch like 12 episodes in 2 days because the finale is premiering and I haven't seen any of it. And if I don't see it all, I'm not going to know what the hell's going on.
It's kind of a bad example, though, because that's a weekly airing show.
Yeah, I know. But still...
Yeah.
Like, if you've missed it, I guess what I'm saying is, if you've missed it consistently, like, if you're just jumping into Game of Thrones now, you need yeah. to watch everything that preceded
yep. yeah.
it. And you have no chance of yeah. following it at all if you haven't watched literally everything.
Yeah. Oh, but let's wrap up this last episode. Their first shot of Hero. They've landed on Earth, and their first shot of Hero is him holding a pineapple for no reason, which is really funny to yeah. me. And he starts he's playing fetch with dogs with a pineapple, which is just great. Like, did they really need to like show us that they've landed in a tropical location or something? They get kind of picked up by these. Trey's faction guys who are really nice to them.
The Trey's faction split off, there has been a real appreciation of the Gundam pilots.
Like, which I guess makes sense considering the ideology. Like,
yeah,
they pretty much split off because he's against mobile dolls and he's more for like people piloting. And Trey seems to have kind of a fondness for them anyway.
Yeah, that's fair.
And
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I don't really remember much of that episode, except that, well, I do remember that it's the introduction of Dorothy, who is like...
She is great.
Our, as you said while we were doing the pre-discussion, the auntie really not. That's
yeah,
fair.
She, yep. Yeah. She dresses the same and has the similar length hair, except blonde, and she has weird eyebrows. And she's, yeah. She comes in, and she's like, she's a direct relative of one of the founders of Rumafeller. And she comes in, instead of being like, oh man, peace is great, she's just like, she literally says, I love wars. I really do. Like, she just loves war. The most ridiculous scene is she sees like a couple planes flying over, and she like kind of angrily turns around and shouts up at these planes in the stratosphere. It goes, hurry up and start a war! Which is just like, okay, like, could they have done that a little better? Like, a character who's like pro-war or pro-fighting. It's just like, I mean, I guess she's a kid, but it's crazy. She's
very much a, like, less, or rather, like, a more heavy-handed female Trace.
That makes sense.
A good way to explain her, at least at this point in the series. Yeah.
She's not subtle.
She has the same kind of philosophy, but there's a lot less philosophizing behind it, I guess.
Which, hey, that's refreshing. I'm a little sick of it from Trace.
Yeah, he does tend to go on. But, yeah, and then we have an episode where Hero is piloting a Leo fighting Rumafeller Foundation people who are occupying a town also in Leos. It's kind of hard to tell the two factions apart. Well, okay, that's stupid. The Rumafeller Leos are blue.
Yeah, I couldn't tell which one was supposed to be colored which, but eventually I figured out with context clues. Yeah, this episode's just kind of whatever. Like, it's all right. Hero ends up fighting with them. He ends up going to this town that Katra's in. Katra's kind of against the idea of Hero fighting for them. And,
They're also fighting in a nation that has allied itself with the Sand Kingdom and like total pacifist ideology. So,
but
all the townspeople have to evacuate, and they're being mistreated. Obviously,
yeah, they're being kind of bullied by the Rumafeller people who are there into fighting for them, and they're like, "No, we're gonna bail." Katra learns about this idea of total pacifism from a random townsperson. And basically learns about Saint Kingdom's growing popularity. Hero gets like wrecked in battle because the Rumafeller Foundation sends in the insane mobile dolls that are just like, what are they called? Yeah, what's this model
called?
They're Virgos. Virgos are awesome, by the way. I wish they had a least recent model of that.
Or any model.
Yeah, pretty sure that was never made. Fuck that. It's a really cool looking suit. They've got like the little, they basically are a combination between the Mercurius and the V8, but mass produced.
With the defensors and also the laser cannon.
Yeah. And they're just like godly. They just come in and tear everyone up. Hero doesn't even kill one of them. He just gets wrecked. I mean, he is an Aaliyah, but still.
Well, until they draw the,
that's right.
Noin flies in and drops the Buster rifle, and then they just blow the shit out of him.
Yeah, as a subplot to these last two episodes, Noin and Sally Poe got together and they like recovered the original Wing Gundam from undersea, and they come in to transport Hero and Katra to Saint Kingdom to reunite with Relina. That's where it ends.
Yeah. Also, there's two things that we sort of forgot about that are important in all of this. One being that Zex Marquis as Meliardo Peacecraft, names that I always worry my roommate is going to hear me saying, are he is in space and he's captured by a Hero and Troa when they're both piloting the Mercurius and V8.
And then he vanishes.
Yeah, he kind of stops being important. He has, like, an episode dedicated to him, but what I think is really funny is that technically no one's supposed to recognize him because he doesn't have the mask, but literally his first appearance, there's an Oz soldier who's just like, that's Zex Marquis. Like,
yeah.
His first appearance, someone's just like, yeah, I know who you are.
It's the opposite of most it's the opposite of like most other anime I've seen, where it's, you know,
yeah,
Sailor Moon is like they'll change into their outfits and no one can recognize them.
Yeah, no one knows.
There's no mask, there's nothing, and it's like the same hairstyle. That's like the most unique hairstyle in the world, and it's like I don't know who that is.
Yeah,
where's Usagi? Where'd she go? And it's just like, yeah, okay, I love this show. It's great.
But
speaking of it, which,
yeah, that is great. Because, yeah. And, of course, he's not doing a great job of disguising himself since he's piloting the same mobile suit that,
Zex is known
to pilot.
The one mobile suit in the world that Zex is known to pilot.
Like, he's trying less hard to disguise himself than Char did in Zeta Gundam, which is a stupid reference
sunglasses.
For people who haven't seen it, but... Yeah, it's just a similar situation, a character who wears sunglasses, still wears a signature color, still pilots a mobile suit painted in his signature color, has the same exact combat style, and no one fucking
knows.
Constantly
referred to as the Red Comet, like, which he was referred to as before. No one recognizes.
No one's like, oh yeah, that seems really, really familiar, except to the main character who is brilliantly sees right through it.
He's just like the Red Comet. Wow.
Leading to, I mean, I don't want to talk about Zeta, but leading to one of the best scenes in that whole series, which is the actual reveal to the crew of the main ship. And everyone's like, what? No way. Except the main character just says, yeah, that was obvious. anyway, so he does some stuff. He's like an ambassador from Earth to the colonies. He's trying to negotiate with them.
Lady Gun, and then, she's still alive. They talk for a bit.
And then the other thing that's important is that the Gundam scientists who are still captured and being held on the moon have the awesome idea to rebuild and upgrade the Death Scythe and Shenlong into the Death Scythe Hell.
I believe it's the Ultron. Nataku. Why do you call it Nataku? Is there a reason for that?
There is, but it's not really explored or revealed until Endless Waltz, for whatever reason. They decided to just gloss that over.
All right. Well, and also, so we had a bet earlier. That Gundam Wing would not be able to pass the Bechdel test in this block 3 times. And I thought for sure I was going to lose, because there are like no female characters talking to each other until episode, I think, 28.
Yeah, and then you have Noin and Sally Poe sharing like half an episode together.
Yeah.
And then Dorothy
and they constantly
Relina,
pass it.
Obviously.
And Relina and Dorothy, too. And then I was like, well, shit, I won.
Well, I have lost, so that means that you now have the pick of what the next series we watch is.
And now I would like to continue doing bets. Not sure what to make of that, but thinking on that, while I do have the selection of the next series, I'm still thinking on it. I'm not exactly sure what I want
to
do.
Well,
tempted by
we don't need to talk about
things.
That until, like, you know, after we watch Endless Waltz, which is planning on watching after this.
You know, a little tempted by Ronin Warriors, a show neither of us have really seen at all. That's a little tempting to just go into something completely blind. Sailor Moon's always up there.
It's always Reboot. Reboots on Hulu.
You know, instead I should watch every episode of Reboot that I videotaped off my VHS. I taped every episode. I don't know where they are. They don't exist anymore. I'm sure they're in a dumpster. But I wish I had all of those, because that would have been amazing. Oh, my God.
I guess that'll be it. Next week we're going to be doing the... I guess what episode
31 through 40.
31 through 40, and we're closing
in
on the end.
Yeah, in our final stretch. It's the third act's
we'll
about to begin.
See you all next week, you will hear us.
Curtain's just rising on that third act. Trey says a bunch of shit like this in his recap episode.
Yeah, that's true. He does.
I guess the curtain's just about to rise on that third act. All the players are set up. And we're going to have a fight. It's going to be great.
Alrighty.
I believe that's a direct quote. All right, let's go.
Be sure to revisit us next week.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah,
came
up with that.
No, I didn't. See ya. Nope, don't remember.
some acknowledgments. The bumpers were taken from Toonami Gundam Wing character promos uploaded by YouTube user PooperScooper99. The opening and closing music, as always, is Vapor Diving by Anatech off the album Anatech Instrumentals Volume 6. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud, and I suggest that you do, because it's awesome. Rights were secured through Jamendo.